duties, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Welcome to another hazy episode of the Higher Side Chats, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke. I'm your good time guy, Greg Carlwood, and we have the treat of all treats for you today, and that sweet, sweet goodness is the great philosopher and teacher Neil Kramer, and I can't wait to get him in the conversation, but with me here to grease the wheels and fire this bitch up is my good friend and occasional co-host Kyle Prindeville. Kyle, my man, everything crescent fresh with you lately?
It's been pretty good. I mean, I can't complain about the way things are going.
Nice. That's an improvement from, I think, the last time I talked to you.
Well, I have this thing about honesty where it's a real tough road, because if I'm always bitching and moaning and complaining, is that honesty or is that playing the victim? And it's a difficult balance. I don't know.
It is, because you're supposed to have a positive outlook, you know, you're supposed to manifest positive thoughts and not get mired in negativity. But if you're honest about your situation and your situation isn't good, where do you draw the line?
Well, like, sometimes I feel like I'm doing justice to truth by just, you know, verbalizing how much pain I may be in a particular time. But then if that becomes the entirety of my Twitter feed, then I'm focusing too much on pain, I believe. So you got to switch it up. You got to keep it light. You got to give the people some humor, something sentimental, cheer them up, pictures of your pets or something like that.
Yeah, I do plenty of that. But, you know, I'm also on the cusp of taking the plunge into manifesting the life I want to live, trusting that a path will unfold as I stumble into the dark abyss. And it is both scary and exciting. But, I mean, every month, man, honestly, we crush the numbers from the month before on THC. And it's not really doing anything for me from a financial perspective, but talking to Jay Widener and thinking about the power of manifesting positive thoughts and really just going for the reality that I want to go for, I think that it's important to put this into practice. You know, maybe I'll be my own guinea pig and document it through this show, but it's about to happen and it's scary.
But fear and anticipation and excitement are all kind of blended together at that point. But you're like about to step out into the unknown. I mean, it's, the wheels are in motion. Like, there's no way to stop it now. I mean, imagine, imagine the world if everybody was doing what they wanted to do and contributing what they felt like they could and wanted to contribute. And your contribution is THC, and damn it, we love it, and it's got to keep going. And if more people could somehow, in some way, make a choice or make a leap of faith that separated them from a dull, clock-driven, passing the time idly by kind of a job, a just sullen and worthless existence with no challenges or triumphs, I would much prefer to boldly go into an endeavor of what you actually wanted to do, your own artistic expression. I think that's much more fulfilling, and you're going to be more productive doing that.
And that's why I start thinking about these creative ways to maybe give back more. And I thought about, I don't know if you saw the donations idea that I was talking about on some of the social media sites, but if I were to get donations, and of course I don't get very many right now, but by doing this, I think it would prompt more. If I gave away half my donations to a random listener every month, that would be pretty damn awesome. Like, you know, if 1,000 people donated $1 and then I gave half of that away, like, somebody on that list would just get $500, you know? Like, that's pretty badass. I would like to be able to do that kind of stuff, that targeted goodwill.
I really like the idea. I think it's a fantastic concept. But you say something like that onto Twitter, and the immediate response from everybody is, why we cannot do this? Why the administration and its laws and what's legal and what isn't, and oh, this is under so-and-so ordinance in whatever state. Everybody's mind is just obsessed with these goddamn arbitrary rules, and there's no creative ideas like this. Hey, I'm going to give a little kickback to my fans who are already kicking back to me. It's sweet. That's a natural cycle. It makes plenty of sense, but you get all these goddamn laws in the way, and now nothing can be done.
It is fucking silly and ridiculous that I'm not sure what I can do with what's essentially my own money. If it's donated to me, it's just mine. And at that point, I should be able to do whatever I want. And it's fucked up that I'm not sure if I can in this convoluted system that we have. But I think, and I do have to talk to some more people in the fucking gaming commission. I've been through 3 or 4 different agencies, and we're still trying to figure it out. But it seems like it resembles too close to a lottery. And, you know, I don't know if I want to mess with it. But it would be fucking awesome to do. And then I could do like a 10-minute little interview with whoever it is that I give money to. Like, hey, man, what's your situation? You know, oh, dude, I didn't know how I was going to fucking pay for my fucking dog's vet bill because he's really sick or whatever the fuck it is. It'd be cool to hear a story of how the audience just had direct influence on helping someone get through this shitty structure.
To me, it resembles less a lottery and more like a religion. And religions aren't taxed. You know, nobody's coming after their money. Their money is safe. And they don't even kick back anything. Whatever you give each mass, you're not getting a kickback. There's no percentage of a chance of a kickback.
Maybe I need to get the Higher Side Chats classified as a religion.
Yeah. Or here's another idea is what if instead of giving them a portion of the proceeds, which apparently giving your own money is illegal, if you can't give money to people, what if you gave them a shirt?
Well, yeah, but that's not going to help anybody pay the bills. I'll give a shirt for Christ's sake, but it would be much better and cooler to donate a lot of money because I have this vision of it, amount of money just getting really fucking high, and it's to the point where I'm gifting people, like, because I wouldn't take, if we were getting $10,000 a month in donations, I would not keep half of that. No way. I would just keep enough to get me by, but, you know, whatever that is, I could be giving away like 6, 7, 8 grand a month to just a person, you know, that kind of money just doesn't come around. It would be fucking awesome.
I hope you can work it out with the Gaming Commission.
Yeah, who knows? Oh, another thing I was going to say is I just realized that my Skype has a voicemail. And I was thinking that I'd love it if anyone who wants to call in and leave me a message could. And then I could play them during transitions. And people could call about anything, really. I know we were going to talk about this video we watched with crisis actors in Syria, but we pretty much got to get Neil on the line. But we got listeners in 97 different countries, and that's fucking amazing. And there's so much propaganda out there. It would be awesome for people who live in other countries to call in, leave me a voicemail, and say what the real situation is. Because I can't pay attention to international politics at all. I have no fucking idea what's going on because I won't get it through conventional media. And it's just, I feel like I'm stuck in the American bubble. And if I feel like the information is tainted, why take it in at all? But if you can and you want to, my Skype is Higher Side Chats. And you can also email me an MP3 if you just want to record a little something and attach it to an email. That would be cool. But I'd like to get some listener voices on the air. So if you're interested, I'll keep my Skype up more often. And that's an idea. It's an idea to get the community more involved. All right, well, it looks like it's time to get Kramer in here, so let's take a quick second to top off our glasses and sell a couple t-shirts, hopefully, and we'll get right back to packing bowls and making goals with Neil Kramer.
We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule. And the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft talk.
People, as we go down this conspiratorial journey of exploration of the alternative, I find that once you go deeper than chemtrails, false flag attacks, and UFO censorship, we always find ourselves coming to a place that's a little gray area, it's a little new agey, a little esoteric, where we hear about the suppressed power of the self, the magic of the mind, and the sorcery that keeps us distracted from inner discovery. I have a hard time wrapping my stupid stoner mind around a lot of this stuff, and so I got Neil Kramer to come on the show today and help us plumb the depths of our own psyche and inner peace in a world of extreme chaos. And if you don't already know Neil, he's a brilliant British philosopher and teacher specializing in the fields of consciousness, metaphysics, and mysticism, and he's the author of The Enfoldment, The Organic Path to Clarity, Power, and Transformation, and it's a goddamn pleasure to have him here. Neil, how the hell are you?
I am very well, thank you very much. It's an honor to be with you guys.
Oh, man. I am thrilled to have you here. Thanks for spending some time with us. The main reason I brought you here is because a lot of the time, people start to realize the levels of deep organized corruption among the global elite. It's popular to use the term waking up, but that only seems to be about half the puzzle. And a real awakening really seems to have more to do with self-discovery and a remembering of lost natural knowledge than anything external. And that's really the area I want to try to explore today, because to me it's a bit abstract, and I'm hoping you can make me feel a little less stupid.
Sure. Well, that sounds like a good idea.
Well, let's dive in with this. As I've learned about real history, there seems to have been a lot of energy put into destroying an old Gnostic way of life, like a natural understanding of the universe. And today, the masses seem to find themselves frantic and confused, and we as a race seem to be a bit unhinged. And this is something you talk about a bit in your Guerrilla Psychonautics presentation, but how would you articulate that lost knowledge? What is it that we're missing?
I think you can sum it up by saying that mainstream culture is not a representation of human culture. So the culture that we've known essentially for the last 2,000 years, let's say, you know, from the days of Greece and Rome and all that caper, right up to today in New York and Madison Avenue and Tokyo and London and Paris and Hamburg or wherever, the culture that emanates out of the West is not a reflection of human beings. It is a reflection of the empire. Okay? Mm-hmm. So my proposition right from the start is that as Philip K. Dick, the author, discovered towards the end of his life, there is really one empire, and it just changes its robes, as it were, its garments throughout history. And that single empire stretches back what we think as Americans and Britons quite a long way to Egypt, but it stretches back before then as well. Mm-hmm. And the path of the truth seeker or the mystic or the inquiring individual, however philosophical and, you know, articulate we want to be with the language, somebody who's just looking around truthfully in the world, one of the first things you realize is that the empire sets itself against the individual. And so the only way to fit in is to stop being an individual. So that's what the empire, that's what human culture from the mainstream is trying to propose to us all the time. Don't be an individual, be a member of a collective and just fit in. Right. So one of the earliest things that happens is, you know, in our lifetimes, we can trace this back to our parents, probably in the 50s and 60s, is that from time to time, there's a resurgence where individuals say, hang on a second. No, No, we're going to be individuals, and we're going to represent that through essentially our art, human art, not mainstream nonsense culture, not Justin Bieber and Kylie Minogue, but real music, real painting, real literature, real art, you know, dangerous, perilous, destructive, hazardous, beautiful, romantic art, real art from real people. And that burst through in the last sort of 50, 60 years again. And it's now come to a peak where it's quite hard to put a lid on it. And so it's quite a unique time now in that most people have cottoned onto the idea that mainstream culture is a load of nonsense, and they've started to generate their own subcultures. And one of those subcultures is what we call, you know, the alternative community, alternative thinking, whatever, spirituality. You know, people say new age, esoteric, occult, mystical, whatever. But an alternative way of thinking about the world. And lots of subcultures know in their hearts, whatever your thing is, whether it's music or art or this or that, we feel that there's something important going on which is being kept from us. And as I say, my proposition to you and your audience is that it's been that way for many thousands of years. And this is the first time that they're really struggling to put a lid on it. So that's the so-called waking up. It just starts off as a feeling, I think, amongst people.
Well, that's interesting about the waking up aspect as or the keeping a lid on it aspect, because a lot of people talk about from an astrological perspective or a positioning in the universe perspective or energy fields or whatever you want to use to describe it. It's part of a natural process, like a changing of the seasons, where human consciousness raises to a level of awareness on a bigger scale. Do you think that has anything to do with this?
Yeah, I do. I think that our sort of spiritual ancestors who have taken the time to think about this, only in the same manner that we're doing now, but people who did this 500, 5,000 years ago, whatever, they said, they do indeed appear to be cycles. And, you know, our Indian chums call them yuga cycles. Some of our mystical friends call them galactic cycles, you know, which is kind of like the chosen preferred terminology at the moment. These huge galactic cycles where we're exposed to different parts of the galaxy, different stars, different radiation. And that has a physical, molecular, emotional, psychological effect on everything, all life in those systems. And you could say that maybe it's just a piece of natural science where as the spiral arms kind of rotate and pivot through space, that that has an effect on the life. And sometimes it's sleeping and sometimes it's very vibrant and very awake and very vivid, you know, in its color and in its expression. And you could say that we would tend to associate darkness and control with periods of sleeping, periods of numbness. And we would associate awakening and freedom and truth with periods of light. And maybe those things are very, very well known and very clearly mapped out. And it does cycle through this stuff over and over and over again. But every time a cycle happens, the whole system gets slightly upgraded. So it's not just like it's light and dark, and no one ever goes anywhere. Every time we go through a cycle, there's a little incremental iteration upgrade, you know, like version 1.1, 1.2, 1.3. And then every now and again, you get a big version upgrade, right? Version 2. Version 2.0, wow, it's a big new upgrade with a new interface and new stuff and faster and stronger and sexier. And I think that's where we're coming to now, because the individual can no longer really, if they choose, be suppressed. Whereas only 100 years ago, your family and my family were just squashed into the ground and just did what they were told. That doesn't really happen anymore unless you want it. So unless you consent to your own slavery, you don't need to do that anymore. If you're lucky and you live in America or Europe or Britain or wherever, if you've got a couple of dollars in your pocket and you can drive a car and you've got reasonable interpersonal skills, you can sort of do whatever you want now. So the control level has shifted from physical, which it has been for a very, very long time, to psychological. So it now preys on the unthinking man, on the lazy man, and the weak man. And so part of the journey of awakening is coming into your sovereignty, into the idea that, well, you are your own boss. We are each our own boss. And one of the key factors that detaches you from control is to assume that attitude, not in, you know, being massively too big for your own boots or arrogant or anything, in the same way that if we use a popular culture reference, like a Jedi would be master of himself, yeah, in a very humble, powerful, quiet, balanced manner. And the Jedi being based on many spiritual martial artists of Europe, as we would call it now, real people, real times, real druidic warriors of the time. You have to become master of yourself. You become master of everything about you, achieve self-mastery in everything you have, and then nobody can sort of touch you, really. And that is the natural path of the human. That's what everybody is. In a sense, all beings with a human soul are destined for that. And so the worst thing, really, that conspiratorial and control elements can do is just delay that process. And they might delay it for a few millennia. You know, it can be pretty horrendous. But it can never truly be stopped unless we agree to it. And now people are withdrawing that agreement, withdrawing that consent and saying, you know what, I think I'm going to go my own way, actually. Thanks a lot, but I'm going to go my own way.
Yeah.
It seems to me that, as you put it, the new systems upgrade that we've gotten with the social media and the internet and connectivity and a quality of access to information that we're experiencing with these newest reality patches that we've been most recently adapted to, it seems like the freedom of expression is a lot more pronounced now. There's less of a... there's less of a need to pay attention to the authority figure. It seems like people are more content spending time on their own phones than paying attention to what the king or queen or nobles are doing. And so there's a bit of a change just in people being more open and enjoying their own voice and entertaining other people's ideas as well.
Yeah, I think once you get into the kind of vibe of generating your own culture and your own media and your own philosophy, you sort of come very quickly as a young man or a young woman to the conclusion that you think, you know, I can do this. You know, my art, my philosophy, my perspective is just as good as anybody else's. And I don't have to be an academic or government-sponsored or university professor to do this. And in fact, perhaps it's an impediment and a handicap to have those things. Perhaps it's better to develop my own learning and my own discernment and my own scholarly attitude and my own study, you know. And I think it's a little bit like, you know, when I was a kid, when mums and dads had children, you send them to school. You don't even think twice about it. You send them to school. That's what you do. Nowadays, that's different, particularly in the States. Across the States, East Coast and West Coast, we have homeschooling, which is very good. But we have something even more interesting to me, which is unschooling, where the kid is not given any syllabus at all, and they're completely self-directed. And there's a pattern with that, which is for the first year, they just mess around all year, and they just play on the Xbox like solidly for 12 months and, you know, drink Coca-Cola and eat Doritos and just do whatever the hell they want. And then after a year, they think, that's not actually that interesting. I'm kind of bored. Maybe there are interesting things in the world. And then suddenly, of their own volition, they get into like chemistry and botany and exploration and survivalism and natural history and all these fantastic, wonderful, amazing things about the planet. And then they study to a degree and with a passion that is never, ever seen in school, ever. Because it's completely driven by the appetite of the individual. So why bother? You know, there's no need to if you don't want to. So if you're going to do it, make sure it's something you actually care about. And then you can go into it, as I say, to such a depth that you become very quickly expert in your field. And this is upsetting the system from the foundations up, because the very foundations of control are to uneducate the young people, which is what high schools and colleges and universities are explicitly for. That's what they're for. They prepare people for the workplace by de-educating them. That's what they do.
Yep.
So to choose to educate ourselves freely with the information at our fingertips now is a massively radical thing to do. Very exciting.
Yeah, it really is, and that's well said. But, you know, I think this is kind of the area that myself and a lot of the audience is kind of stuck in, because we've been plugged into this shitty system, and it's tricked us for a while. But now we're open-minded, yeah. We're clued in. But within our daily lives, we're still victims of the consumer construct, victims of economic slavery. And it's
are
almost,
you? It, are I, you? I, are may, you victims?
Am I projecting? Because maybe I'm projecting.
Well, if you're a victim, then you're a victim. If you're not a victim, then you're not a victim. It's largely an attitude. You know, like many men who have been locked up and incarcerated for years, with no hope of parole and no hope of release, whether it's through their own badness or through some, you know, aberration of law. If you're locked up in a little room for 25 years, very quickly you learn that the first freedom is mental freedom, is your attitude. And that is number one. That is the very, very, very first thing that you learn. And so that ties back into this point I made earlier of sovereignty, which is that our families, our parents and their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents are so ingrained with the idea of class, economic class, blood class, you know, subservience, right, dominance, power, wealth, aristocracy, that is so ingrained into the blood of our families that we, you might say, are the very first generation, certainly mine is, who come along and say, well, yeah, whatever, I don't really classify myself based on my genetic heritage, nor do I evaluate myself based on my economic situation. Therefore, that immediately releases me from lots of systems. And if you then take that to the next level and understand that you're not a subject of any monarch, that's a fiction. And if you're in a republic, a constitutional republic, say, like this, you are also not a citizen. Nobody here is a citizen. If you're a free, human, sovereign being, you are not a citizen. That's a fiction. So if you don't think about these things and you fall into the idea that I am a working class American citizen, then you are a victim, because you have placed yourself in victimhood. To see the truth of it, to investigate what does it mean to be a citizen and not to be a citizen? What is a society? What does that actually legally constitute in our culture? And when you examine that and begin to deconstruct it, the very notion of victimhood begins to evaporate. But most people don't want to do that. They would rather do as they're told. Most people enjoy doing as they're told by somebody else. They would rather have Rand Paul, who seems like a reasonably nice human being to me, run everything for them and tell them what to do. So they're looking for the best master to give their power to.
I mean, I know what you're saying, and I do agree with you that a lot of people are like that. But I mean, myself, I'm torn up about it. And I mean, teachers like yourself say that this 3D construct of consensus reality isn't real. But when I consider telling my boss to fuck off and rent's due in 3 days, it feels really fucking real to me. You know, I mean, how can I prove to myself that it isn't, like, you know?
Well, you'll never hear me say that it isn't real. This is real, right?
That's the victimization I'm talking about. I don't like it, but I'm stuck.
Well, are you stuck? I'd ask that question again. You feel stuck, right? That's a big, massive difference.
How can I convince myself that I'm not? How can I prove it to myself?
Don't try and prove anything. And don't try and convince yourself. Just try to understand the truth of it. And the truth of it is that there are many realities that overlap each other. And this third density one, which is about very physical, hard, moral, ethical lessons, is a training ground, an assault course that you are in the middle of. And you are not meant to escape from it right now. You are meant to master it in yourself for your own purposes. For your own purposes. So let us say, before you went through the magical tunnel into your mother's womb and into this universe, you said, right, I want to go somewhere where I'll get my spiritual vessel so tight and so strong, I'll be like Bruce Lee, right? I'll be so awesome. I'll just be this powerhouse of cleanliness and truth and natural human being, right? And somebody taps you on the shoulder and says, well, you know what? There's this crazy planet called Earth, right? And right now, it's in the throes of darkness, but it's just cracking open. And the polarity on that planet of righteousness and wrong, of empowerment and of subservience is at an all-time peak. You know, there are some phenomenally excellent things going on. True. And also some excruciating sorrow is also going on at the same time. And so this is the spiritual assault course that is a piece of theater, right? Mm-hmm. And if you are enmeshed only in the theater, it feels like you're trapped. And so the path of the mystic, and this is a sacred and wonderful thing, is to see that that is not true, that you are not trapped in the theater. Only your mind is trapped here because of its coarseness. And so there is a refinement that can be brought to mind, rather like refining an ore to provide a precious metal, where once you've understood that process and once you begin that unfoldment, it attaches you to your true position of consciousness, which is not here. You are projected here in the same way that you're projected into World of Warcraft or Oblivion, you know, a computer game where you're just like a little avatar. This is your avatar. This is trapped here because you've chosen to be here, but you are not here. And so part of the discovery of the mystic is to locate your true seat, which is in a different dimensional space that is no more or less natural than this. It's just a different order of nature, a different kingdom within this kingdom. And to get there, you need to purify your mind, which is the whole endeavor of the mystic is to do that one thing, to purify the mind to an extent where it locates the higher self and begins to withdraw its consent to its own bondage.
Man, those are powerful and inspirational ideas, you know, but I just have such a hard time with the concept that our minds are truly the creators of reality. You know, you hear that so much. Like,
I don't think that.
You don't think that?
I do not think that, no.
So what happens when we step outside of the construct? Because is that not a product of, you know, our own mental prison?
No, I think the construct is an idea, and it's a very powerful idea. And if you don't have your own ideas, which, as you know, walk down the street, your regular sports fan or whatever, not characterizing him too well there, but you know what I mean? The average guy, beer and baseball, he doesn't even know what a construct is. So he's going to take mainstream culture as the way it is, right? That is an agreement. So it's more instructive, if I may say, to consider not that the mind generates reality, but the mind interfaces with the reality as an agreement. It's like a contract. Like you show up and I say, sign here. And you just don't even think about it. You just sign it, you know, like people do. Mm-hmm. And what I'm saying is, well, hang on a minute. read the small print, because there are alternatives. And if you withdraw from that agreement, you can start to generate your own version of reality and start to perceive it as it is. Because when we look out here, we're seeing not reality, but a construct, someone else's idea of reality. And to reconfigure that takes time and takes effort and takes, as I say, this path of discipline and discernment. And there's all kinds of things you can do physically and mentally, emotionally, to correct that perception. So it's not that this isn't real and this is being made in error. It's that this is being upheld because we don't realize that there are alternatives.
Gotcha. Well, you know, getting closer to that idea of getting closer to the seat of our consciousness, the multidimensional space where our true being really is, the closest I feel like I've ever had to that realization was on Salvia, which I talk about my experience with Salvia on the show when it's relevant, and it's really refreshing to have heard someone like yourself give a bit of credit to that plant, because yeah. It's responsible for my most intense experiences, and I don't hear a lot of people giving it credit, and I think it's a misconception that maybe stems from its legal status in a lot of places. But, you know, that's overlapping realities and communication with beings and feeling like I was not a human being was definitely something that drove me to feel.
Yeah, it's quite difficult to argue against the idea that these plants, these psychotropic plants, can greatly assist us in reconfiguring our perceptions. They do. That's what, in my view, they're for. They're to say, right, if you need a little assistance, if you need some, you know, real pure juju because you're so, you know, lost in the matrix, no problem. That happens. That happens a lot on Earth. Don't worry about it. But go into this natural space, consume this vine or this cactus or this mushroom or this sage plant. And when it's put together in a certain way and when it's imbibed in a certain way, it will show you what it sees. It will say, look, this is how I see it. Very different. And when you see it from my perspective, you will also gain a different perspective, not only on the world at large, but also yourself. You won't just feel like, well, I'm a Homo sapien monkey man. That's mm-hmm. me. That's what I'm doing. And I'm trapped in this nightmare world. No, that's a total fiction. That's a mental construct that you are agreeing to and maintaining with ignorance. So the plant in its wisdom, and its wisdom is based on age. No more. It's based on age, that its resonance as an entity here is very old. So they're like these little wizard plants sat there just laughing at us, really thinking, Jesus, you know, wake up, will you? What's wrong with these guys? Because our consciousness is very fragmented. Few of us get the chance to carry it over from one incarnation to the next. So the wisest people on Earth are walking around with just 100 years of knowledge at best, which is puny. Whereas the plants don't do that because they don't require an individual soul. They share their knowledge as an unbroken chain, an unbroken chronology of awareness and enlightenment and wisdom and awakening and natural truth about what's going on. So they say, just you jack into this line, plug into what this is. Just a chemical. It's all it is, completely natural. Look at it and I'll show you something. And now, when you've seen it, you won't be able to forget that. And it will have a subtle but potent effect on how you see things. And you'll realize that this solid, massive machine, this clockwork that you call reality, is not very solid at all. Not very solid at all. And in fact, the only thing that holds it together is people's conscious agreement. And if we want to change this, all we have to do is stop agreeing to it. Now, that doesn't mean you tell your boss to go to hell and you stop paying your rent and you get into debt and you start shooting people on the streets. You know, we're not talking about that, because there's a purpose for animal nature, which is what we're enmeshed in at the moment. And one of the purposes of it is to learn high conduct, to learn that morality and ethics and principles and discipline is the bedrock, the foundation of spiritual growth. So the point isn't to get out and escape. is to use this place as the very instrument itself for transformation. To say you are in the shit hottest university in the whole galaxy. This is it. Don't waste your time here by saying, oh, this sucks, I want to go home. This is rubbish, it's so dark and horrible. Well, it is, because that's the part of it that you've chosen to come into, because it's at its zenith, its apex of strangeness, which for the vulnerable and sensitive mind, which all clever people have that in them, can be very wearisome and very agonizing at times. But if you begin to shift your attitude and develop this independent spirit, this warrior spirit, this, like, as I say, like, you know, the martial artist, Ueshiba, you know, the little wise old man, a little tiny guy with a white wispy beard throwing these huge 6-foot guys around. It's his attitude and his understanding of truth that gives him that power, not his muscles, not some magical force, but his attitude to existence, to knowing that existence is basically cycles moving around one another, and that it is in itself entirely neutral. And most of the bad things that happen in this earth realm at the moment, and it's temporary, it will soon change, but right now they are a result of our disownment of our own being, to say, well, I don't care, I'll just come to Earth, make apple pie, watch television, go to the office, and just sort of do the best I can and then die. Well, that's how everybody starts off, but if you continue to do that, and 7 billion of us continue to do that, we end up with Barack Obama and George Bush and David Cameron and Angela Merkel and chemtrails and HAARP and, you know, all this stupidity. That's what you end up with when you don't grasp your own determined life.
Well, you talk about, I found really fascinating the idea that the planets contain a certain point of view or perspective that we don't normally consult with. And then when you do imbibe with them and commune with them, you become blended with their consciousness.
Yes.
And you have an all new perspective. And this is so adverse to our whole system of human knowledge and what we've built up as expertise in truth and physics, and the ideas that we hold about the world being material. Even we have very concrete ideas. We really believe what we believe is
that
true.
That is the constructs, science and physics and chemistry, as we understand it in college and university. That's the construct. It's not fake, but it's only one angle on the subject. Like we're stood on a wheel, and 1 degree, number 27, let's say, that's the whole world, the 27th degree, looking at it from here. That's it. There are no others. And I walk around that circle and say, well, listen, I believe that there are 359 others. There are many degrees, many ways of looking at this thing, many perspectives and many angles. But it's so precarious, science, that I think people are starting to cotton onto that and starting to not take it quite so seriously. Unfortunately, in every field of human knowledge, you always get like mavericks and bastards, happily, who just never listen to anybody and just do their own thing and just forge ahead and go crazy and say, you know what, everything that we knew for the last 200 years, the whole Newtonian Cartesian idea, whilst it's given us a tremendous foundational understanding, is actually incorrect. It doesn't actually work like that. It's something else. And even Einstein admitted towards the end of his life that he said, I've got a funny feeling that a lot of this stuff is nonsense, but it's the best we know at the moment. And, you know, damn it, it's well articulated, it's well illustrated. You know, you do better, and nobody could, so that's the best we have. But now we're starting to understand that consciousness isn't this epiphenomenal little puke that comes with your brain. It's actually something that is flowing all the time throughout the system, and all we do is open up a little porthole in our head and let it flow through in one ear and out the other. And depending on the quality of that vessel determines your experience of consciousness. So if your vessel is completely passive, all you will do is share in the dream of other people. Whereas when you start to engage and make that active and think, hang on a second, maybe I am okay to create some things and to think differently and to ask questions that upset people and even make myself feel uncomfortable. When you do that, the consciousness comes in one ear, you change it, and then it goes out the other ear differently for you and everybody else. So the more engaged you are, the more that happens. But one of the fail-safes is if you're sloppy and ill-disciplined and unethical and immoral, you won't make any differences because those things don't work without those foundational materials. So one way of assuring that the individual's muscles, if you like, intellectual and psychological muscles are of a certain aptitude is to put them on Earth, because you can't do Earth very well unless you start to develop your own code of conduct. Do you know what I mean? You soon realize that it's not the Bible, it's not the law books, it's not the Tao Te Ching, it's not this, it's not that, it's not Neil Cramer, it's not, and it's what you do yourself. And you start to formulate your own code of conduct as a man of honor and power on the planet. And that built into that is humility and intellect, creativity, peace, destruction, creation, everything. And that starts to have an effect on how you change the world around you. So as you do that, when you want to change your circumstances, change your girlfriend, change your bank balance, change your clothes and your music and where you live and what food you eat and who you spend your time with, that starts to fall into place with your own growth. And as I've said many times, when the universe, the ecology of life around us, sees that you are taking yourself seriously, bettering yourself, becoming a truer being, it helps you. And it starts to throw your synchronistic brakes, and it starts to give you gifts, and it starts to just give you a bit of a helping hand, really, and say, hey, you're not alone on this, you know, because the universe is doing the same thing we are. It's trying to refine. It's a work in progress. It's not a finished thing. It's continually refining, and we're part of that refinement. And when you get that, suddenly life starts to be less, you know, this clunky cause and effect thing, and be something much more coherent and synchronistic and magical.
I mean, it sounds great. I love listening to you talk about it. I mean, this kind of gets into the idea of the life path. I mean, do you think this is what you're describing is generally everybody's life path, or do you think we have one that's individualized, and how do we realize it? How do we get on track if we're completely out of the ballpark?
Well, you could say that if you don't do anything, you will assume the default pattern, which is you'll do what your family did.
Right.
You'll do it differently. You'll wear different clothes, listen to different music. But by and large, you will just repeat what your family did for generations. So the default pattern is repeat. So until you stop and think, hang on a second, wait a minute, reality is a choice. How you do this is a choice. Until you do that, you will just repeat the old pattern. And when you do that, you then move into a very sacred stage. Like, you know, I don't want to use too flowery language, but like it's kind of like a pilgrimage where instead of moving in the world of commerce, you're not. You're moving in a world of knowledge. And then instead of behaving for your advantage, you don't do that anymore. You behave in a way that is conducive to your own clarity. So it's a massive shift, that to say, I don't want to be a human being who is just a commercial unit engaged in mercantile behavior of buying and selling products and services. That isn't a natural planet. That's a planet that's gone wrong. And that's where we are at the moment, which is kind of funny and bizarre. So to come in at this point, like I say, at the peak of bizarreness, provides what I would consider as quite an unprecedented opportunity for growth, to accelerate growth so quickly that you won't know, you know, what day it is.
Man, you know, Something else you talked about in the Guerrilla Psychonautics presentation was you talked about the brain as a filtering system, and you go through a couple levels of various limitations. Control system containment, which is, you know, what a shining a light on the conspiracy space helps us overcome, or sensory containment, which is where psychedelics help us have experiences beyond our senses. But that last level is dimensional containment, which seems to be just beyond my realm of understanding. Can you help me break down that last level?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a reason it's the last level, because it's one of the sort of big attainments. So as you say, if you go through, the first one is social deconditioning, which is to remove yourself from the culture. You can go back in it if you want to, but remove yourself from the cultural frequency. And then mainstream education, then control system conditioning, like, you know, it's your duty to vote. You are a citizen. You live in the best country in the world. Vote Democrat or Republican. That nonsense obviously has to go. Sensorial containment, i.e. the ancient idea that the five-sense world is a fiction, which it is. There is no such thing as a tree. There's no such thing as a glass of water. There's no such thing as red or orange or blue. Those are human constructs. Those are ideas, right, that the brain puts together. And that's a classical Maya study of wisdom, to say there's this illusory layer which has a reality, but it isn't it. It's a representation of something. And then when you get to that point and you're starting to interface at that level, and it requires discipline. We can't just keep popping our DMT capsules or whatever, because you become overly reliant on it. You know, like if you were taking 10 Advil every day, you're going to weaken a part of your body. So you have to understand that it's medicinal, as I often say, not dietary, you know. But when you start to get the trick of it, to see, yeah, the sensory stuff is just one way of doing it. It's not the way of doing it, and it's certainly not the thing in itself. It's a representation of it. You think, well, what is the thing in itself then? When we see a tree, what are we seeing? When we say, well, that's red, that red t-shirt or that red sofa, what is it? What is red then? You say, right, well, those emanations are the result of something else that isn't here. They are the result of an energetic emanation from a different dimensional space, a different density. So what happens in the 3D world is the result of what's being generated in another place altogether. And that is the journey of the mystic, to say, I think I'd like to go and have a look at that place. And our English and German and French mystical literature is replete with people who go on journeys to that place, to that shore, to those far shores. And we would call it the fifth dimension or the fourth dimension, or, you know, the astral realm or galactic core or this or that, whatever. But there is certainly a lot of juice and a lot of data. If you look with the highest discernment, hand on heart, pause all your belief systems and just feel it, that everything that occurs here is the result of something else. So these are the ripples on the pond from a stone that was thrown far, far, far away. And so we're looking at very, very distant echoes and interference patterns and reflections here, which have reality. They have a purpose. They're not meaningless. They're not without value. They are very valuable, or we wouldn't have them. Nature doesn't waste time and effort and energy ever. So they have a value. But as you come to that, as you say, that dimensional containment, you realize that it's only your mind that contains you here. You cannot be contained here, because you're not here. You are not here. And that discovery is a singular point on the path where, once you've had it, it changes your life. And so a lot of groundwork needs to be put in place until that moment arrives.
Powerful. Well, Neil, I think we've touched the bottom of the rabbit hole, man. My brain has been turned to mush and my mind thoroughly blown. I mean, any final tips for bettering our attitude or hiring our consciousness?
Yeah, balance, very important. If you're going to destroy a concept, make sure you create a new one. And if you're going to upset the apple cart by you know, really kind of changing the way you used to think about something. Make sure that that is balanced with understanding the beauty of another system. So if you're going to understand that government isn't your friend, find out who are your friends. If you're going to find out that the Facebook and Twitter don't make us any better off, find out what technology does make us better off. So that balance point is very essential, because if we always seek the balance from an external source or a book or an individual or a religion, we'll always be wrong-footed. So we have to be very careful, like the martial artist, like the dancer, like the trapeze artist or whatever, the tightrope walker, to say, right, once I've got balance, I can walk across the Grand Canyon or Niagara Falls, no problem. Once I've got that point of balance. And that, again, is having faith in your own judgment. Very simple, but very powerful.
Yeah. Hey, amen, man. I really appreciate the time we've spent. It's been excellent. You're a great guest. I love your willingness to explore the strange universe we're in. Do you want to tell people where they can keep up with you and maybe where they can get a hold of your book?
Yeah, sure. Thank you. NeilKramer.com is my website, and you can kind of see everything there. There's interviews, essays, downloads, audio books. You can buy my book, The Unfoldment, if you enjoy what I've had to say. You can get it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble and loads of regular bookstores and online bookstores. So please take a look at that. I think you'll enjoy it. It's very much written from the heart. It's very uplifting. It's very supportive of human growth. It's not despondent. It's not fantasy. It's very real, very true. So, NeilKramer.com.
Excellent, man. Well, keep doing what you do, and hopefully we can talk again. Thanks, Neil.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
All right, man. Enjoy your day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye. Wow. Those deep esoteric concepts always start to make sense in a conversation like that, and then I snap back to 9-to-5 reality and get caught up in what I have to do and when I have to be at work. And then it's all just concepts and ideas, you know? I don't feel like it's helping anything.
Well, I feel like it's all about your outlook. I think that's a very important point that Neil is making. And you've noted in other episodes how you've had a negative outlook. You got to work on your outlook. But what can you do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to be honest about it, but I sound like I have the development of a fucking 5-year-old.
Well, Ram Dass, I was just reading something he wrote, or something he was actually talking about in a lecture, which has to do with acceptance. And this is what a lot of people have a very difficult time with. You know, we're so used to polarity, and we're so used to defining what sucks in our life and what we enjoy, and oh, I'm doing this thing that I hate doing in order to enjoy in the future. And we play these time games with ourselves where it's a, you know, hide and seek with, oh, now I'm in a terrible circumstance, oh, now I'm in a great circumstance, oh, but I got to go back to work tomorrow. And Ram Dass is saying, essentially, with acceptance, you have to begin to see all things that happen to you in your life as opportunities for you to make free choices. So you see all of your obstacles as grace, whether they're good or bad. You begin to accept that this is what's happening, regardless, it's beyond your control. You're not the victim of it, but you are participating with it, and you are still able to make choices, even in the most difficult circumstance. And that's kind of the best we can hope for, is it's, there's never going to be a, you know, this perfect utopian state. In my opinion, you know, it's always difficult choices amidst incomplete information.
Yeah, and I know you and I talk about the savior construct a lot when we read various deep-level conspiracy material. And sometimes I think this quote-unquote time of awakening is a thread in that same idea, that same construct. Like, oh, well, don't worry, because this is the time of awakening. You're waking up, man. We're all waking up. And I love the idea of it, but I wonder if it's not just, again, waiting for something that will never come. Or maybe this age of awakening is a 5,000-year process, and I'm going to be alive for the first 0.001% of it. you know, well, which means nothing to me.
A lot of people divide it up. It's either a utopia that we actually have to fight for in a political sense or a truth sense, or we have to just honestly state what we want the world to be for it to change in that direction. We have to define what is wrong and then thus define what we want instead. And that's kind of this utopian idea of how we can change things. And there's this other idea, which is called a millenarian. And you just think that at a certain galactic point in time, a trigger clicks, and as you put in the interview, now it's a new season. It's beyond anybody's control. It just shifts over, and now we're in a new upgrade. Right. Well, you know, that is the ultimate panacea. That's the ultimate, thing to make the opiate of the masses in order to make them not politically active is to say that, oh, yeah, don't worry. We're all waking up, whether we are on the streets screaming at the banks or not. That's a nice little diversion to just, and I know plenty of goddamn New Age people that I meet. They all say the same kind of things and are love and light and everything's great and don't ever focus on the negative. Don't focus on the negative in your life. And some people say, well, you know, the negative's right here. And they say, but I'm looking over here. So, right. You may be looking over here, but the negative is still right here with us. Yeah. So I don't know this whole thing about whether you should focus on it or ignore it, or whether you should wait for change to happen, or whether you should be an active agent of your own change.
Right. I think you have to be an active agent. I mean, because what's the difference between passively accepting the negative with a veil of a positive attitude and someone who is dense as fuck and hasn't woken up at all to anything? What's the difference? You know? You're still letting it's letting yourself be victimized versus being ignorant to the victimization. But to the elites or to anyone who's the head of a corporation, they could give a fuck if you're going to play ball. You know, just play ball. I don't give a fuck what you think.
Yeah, they will allow us these delusions, whatever delusions we want to be. I mean, and it's not like they're in control. You know, I say they will allow us. Let's really examine this statement. As Neil said, it's a bit of a fiction to think that there are actually authorities. There aren't authorities. There's people who portray authorities. They wear the mask. They wear the expertise. They have the degrees, the things on the wall, or the uniform, or the badges, whatever it takes. They are more accredited than you. But when it comes down to it, it is still you who chooses what you think and what you believe. And are you going to go around following everybody else and trying to be the best other person? Or are you going to, like Neil said, try to develop your own philosophy of being, and maybe it makes you a complete individual and nobody accepts you and you wander from group to group and just feel like, I don't really fit in here. But, you know, that's the path. That's the difficult path. You have to be a warrior or druid. Or a Jedi, in order to
a mystic,
and that's what the Jedi in the original trilogy, mystics. They're living off on the edge of society. Yeah. You don't really know what their magic or weaponry is. And then in the prequels, they're police officers. What the fuck happened?
That's true. Yeah, that's a big part of why the prequels suck. Is there's just too many of them, and none of them seem to be enlightened beings.
They're just following orders. They go to a council meeting. You know, the guys behind the scenes decide what the galactic peacekeeping force is going to go do next. It's a farce. It's a goddamn joke. It's not what a Jedi is.
And now that Disney's in charge of the next three movies, I mean, I can only imagine that the subtext, the subliminal messaging will be at an all-time high, which will be great to dissect, but
it always
blows. If you like Star Wars, it kind of sucks.
Well, Neo is more of a Jedi than the freaking Jedis in the prequels were.
Good point.
But Neo, it's also in that fight scene, you know, the most famous scene of the original Matrix is this fight scene sequence where Neo first gets, like, picked up by the crew and he's with Morpheus, and Morpheus saying some of the most iconic quotes, such as, "You think that's air you're breathing?" Or, "You think that your body's limitations have anything to do with your strength or speed here?" That's everything that Neil was talking about in terms of your perspective, your point of view determines you know, your course in life much more than, you know, this, the kind of reality that we tend to believe, we're the victims, we get kicked around by our circumstance, but really, that's a mindset as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I meant by manifesting your own reality, which he said he doesn't believe, but to me, that's what you're describing is that, choosing your path.
There's a difference between this kind of crap that they peddle in The Secret, which is you just use visualization magic, and you literally manifest, like you really just bring into being by some conjuring, you know, you bring matter into being. That's kind of ridiculous, but his a little bit different than that, to say you can alter your reality just by loosening up a little bit, like trying to be more lucid, like trying to treat it more like a waking dream, trying to make choices that your own conditioning may prevent you from doing in order to just kind of like explore your own self and explore the nature of reality.
Yeah. Be active instead of just a passive object that things happen to. Instead, go out there and make things happen.
You got to be an active agent. And I want to apologize to science. I want to take a brief second to say it always seems like I'm dogging on science. I have friends who, whenever I say something about science, they get very upset. Their feathers are flustered by this. And it's not that there's anything wrong with science. Science is actually, I think, the great mystical vehicle of, you know, rigor and ritual and objectivity and noting results. I think that is like the path. I think that is the path towards truth and information, and it's fucking great. The problem is when science becomes of itself its own religion, and we become really convinced of these concrete ideas of the past. And as we know, science is always changing. That's the best part of science, is that it allows for itself to change as it comes to new discoveries. But these scientists who become academics, become career academics, it's all about the expertise and the memorization of facts. Well, facts are dead pieces of, those are paths that have already been carved, but truth is this uncarved, living thing that we're all coming to new truths. All science was discovered by individuals who delved into their own individual new truths. And scientists of their day probably thought, who's this asshole? You know, Carl Jung, he thinks he knows what's going on about psychiatry, and this guy's a lunatic. But in the future, you know, then Carl Jung becomes seen as a visionary.
Yeah.
So anything that's offensive to science as the structure that's just an accumulation of all human knowledge as relics from the past, they get offended by new ideas all the time. That kind of science is phony science.
Yeah.
I like the science that can change, is rigorous, really tries to face the truth of our being. And I think like Neil uses some language that is as effective as he can use for describing the ridiculous nature of the reality we're in. Nobody really knows the real answers, but we can try to say it as succinctly as we can. We can try to express what we've come to understand as our own personal truth.
Yeah, I mean, science should be thought of as more of a tool for discovery, not a definition of our reality. I mean, that's kind of what the dogmatic scientist would have you believe, is that if we don't understand it with science by now, then it must be bullshit. It's just people having wishful thoughts.
Yeah, that's the condescending science that I'm not a big fan of.
Yeah.
You got to leave room for the unknowable. It's not only that we've accumulated a lot of knowledge about the natural world. We can make very good predictions now, much better than we could in the past. Yes, that's true. But there's also things we cannot know. We can never get to it underneath it all. We can't define the own axioms. If you remember the Kurt Gödel theorem we talked about many episodes ago.
Yeah, James Stein, I think. The paranormal equation.
Boom. That's a memory for you.
Yeah.
But we are never going to be able to know everything, and I feel like some scientists, yeah, they do this dismissive thing where they think what we know up until this point, that is the total accumulation of all knowledge, and anything else is just wishful thinking.
Well said, man. Well, you know, thanks for being here, dog. We're going to wrap this thing up. I always enjoy you taking the time. You're a THC staple, and I'm glad you're a part of this crazy, stupid show.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity. As always, you put me on with these great guys. Really blows my mind, opens me up, makes me want to read more. You know, I got really depressed recently, and I just thought afterwards, why didn't somebody just tell me to fucking just read? Just why don't you go read instead of whining about shit? Why don't you read something, and then you'll have some more interesting ideas, and you'll become, you know, more interested in life, you know, rather than just complaining about your circumstance. So,
good tip.
Thank you for having me be on the show. It causes me to read more.
Of course, man. So, there it is, people. I appreciate you listening. Please remember that you can leave me a voicemail on Skype at Higherside Chats or by MP3 to my email at thehighersidechats@gmail.com. If I get interesting ones, I will edit them into transitions, and it'll be more of a community type thing. So, anyway, you know about my t-shirts, you know about my desire for donations and to have you share the show and review it where you can. So let's manifest that into reality, and I'll see you next week. Your move, Bilderbergs.
I'm a man in the workshop, won't stop, luxury to the rich in need. Evening and night and daylight, fight and cry and sweat and bleed. Work all day and no play, gonna make me a household name. What is the question? Perfection, not necessarily very ordinary. Couple good celebrity endorsements, quality won't be important. Hearts and minds of the people, the product is totally evil. I don't care what you think about it, so you won't be able to live without it. One for every single room in your house, you kid. Grandma, sister, begging you, please buy me one too. It isn't about how we make it, it's about how we bring it to market. The product will be the redemption to sever the human connection. I don't care what you think about it, so you won't be able to live without. Steeple, now all I need is the people.